Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Hi.
Here's John Williams.
Above the Chicago River. We are live from the Allstate Skyline Studios. This is John Williams. How are you? We are heard weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays 10 a.m. to noon. When am I heard on Saturdays? I think it's 10 to noon. Yeah, that's a real big thought. And of course, on social media, I'm WGN King John, and we do a podcast here called The Mincing Rascals. Features Steve Bertrand and me and some of our friends from the Chicago Tribune, Patty Vasquez and Justin Kaufman, who you hear in the morning and early evenings now on WGN Radio 2. So check that out. We'll drop another one of those on you on Thursday. Okay, so since we last spoke, 70 former U.S. Attorneys General have said that they do not like and do not think it is necessary, this U.S. policy of separating the children from their parents that cross into this country illegally. All four living former first ladies have come out against what we are doing. Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton, Laura Bush, Rosalynn Carter, and to some degree the current first lady, although I don't think I put her squarely in the first camp. More than 600 United Methodist clergy and laity say they are going to bring church law against Jeff Sessions, a fellow United Methodist, for his exercise of the president's will. And there's a number of Republicans that you heard Kim talk about who are also coming out against this policy of separating the parents from the kids. There is that picture of a crying child whose mother is being frisked and eventually separated from the child, which has gone viral today. We'll visit with the photographer that took that on Thursday. And of course, the audio of the children crying at night has really been impactful, too. But you know what happens when you try and push this president? He just pushbacks twice as hard. You know, I won't say I feel bad for, but who's in a bit of a fix are Jeff Sessions, Kristen Nielsen. I mean, there she is, the director of Homeland Security, and I don't know how she feels about this, but I know what her job is, and that's to support the president. Sarah Sanders' job is to voice the views of the president. Jeff Sessions' job is to operate legally, but also to do the job of the president, the desires of the president. Mike Pence, he does everything the president does. So there's some people right now who are all very angry at. But it's another one of those things. It's sort of like the way I used to feel about Sean Spicer. I mean, when we were first getting our heads around this, we thought, God, Sean, how can you say those things? And I always used to say, well, that's because it's his job. You know, somebody's got to do this. Literally, you have to have some adults in the room, and they work with the president, hopefully for the good of the American people. And if you don't like the American president, then what do? Abandon the American people? So you got to keep that job and do the best you can. And then he said, this is my policy, and your job is to help me sell it or to enforce it. And so out they go. I guess they could all quit. Everybody that disagrees with this could quit. Maybe they should do that. I don't know how I would react to that, because I never would have taken that job to begin with. I would have quit on day half. But I wonder what those people are supposed to do. So it's a bit of a mess right now. And the president, if I'm not mistaken, Steve, seems no more willing or ready to change his mind on this. He's meeting with members of Congress about this today. But I haven't heard anybody say, okay, there's a crack in the armor.
Well, he's going up to the Hill to talk about these two immigration bills that may or may not be voted on, the Republican bills. But I think that's going to be overshadowed by this whole separation thing. Absolutely.
It's such a visual. It's such a... You know, I guess the word they use is optics. How does it look? And this is one of those cases where the optics make it so much worse. It's bad. It's just unnecessary. It is utterly unnecessary. And then the optics just make it look like we've lost our soul in this country. You almost want to just reach out to the rest of the planet and say, just so you all know, we're not all on board. Now, you may be, trust me, I know you may be, but I'm telling you, there are many prominent Republican senators and congresspeople, 70 former U.S. attorneys general, all four of the former first ladies, kind of the current First Lady, the Methodist Church clergy, and the list goes on, who are all saying, this isn't us.
It's time for people to start asking who's not on board here.
That's kind of what I'm wondering.
Can I just play a cut from you? This is Elijah Cummings. He's a Democrat from Maryland, a House member. And there was a House hearing today on an Inspector General's report and something else. But he took that moment, and I think he kind of put it all passionately, but succinctly as well.
We should be able to agree that we will not keep kids in child internment camps indefinitely and hidden away from public view. What country is that?
That's Elijah Cummings today on Capitol Hill.
Here's a CNN poll. 58% of Republicans back the separating of families. And I know a lot of Republicans listen to WGN. So maybe as many as 6 out of 10 of you in that group don't agree with the attorneys general, the former first ladies, the current first lady, the Methodist clergy, or me on this. You remember compassionate conservatism? Do you remember George Bush's compassionate conservatism? That was, we're going to be tough. And that will be a compassionate overture to you. How am I going to teach you? How am I going to help you? How am I really going to do you a favor? It's not by giving you handouts. It's by making you self-reliant. It's about making you adhere to the law. And that's going to be a very conservative view of justice, but it will be compassionate. Compassionate conservatism. I don't know that this falls into that camp. This strikes me as, I don't know, leverage. This is just the president saying, I've got something here, and as painful as it is for you all, it's going to stick until I get what I want. Be interesting to see how that set of meetings go today. But I'll bet you a nickel that he doesn't change his view on this. And so in the back of his mind, he must be thinking, okay, this is a jam. All of the things this president has said and done, has he ever backed himself into a corner as much as he is on this one? So how does Donald Trump get out of it? Because you know who else is leveraging this? It's the Democrats. They didn't create this problem. This is not their problem to fix, in that they don't have the power that the president does to simply change the enforcement policy of this, right? But it'll be interesting to see what they do, too. I don't think they're going to budge either. And so those kids in those, what is it, former big box stores and detention facilities, continue to go without their parents. You know, the courts are overloaded down there. And so the idea that now we're going to prosecute these people, I don't know exactly how they're going to get through the backload, let alone the folks that are coming in. Jeff Sessions promises us that it'll be just a few days or a few weeks or a few months or a few years, and they'll all be back together. But I just wonder how quickly that's going to go. 58% of Republicans support this, though. And I need to hear that. And I guess you do, too. Okay, so
can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
Because that sounds like a big number, 58%.
Of Republicans support the separating of families.
Another way to look at that, though, is that 42% of your own party disagrees with you. And I think for there to be an issue where 42% of a sitting president's party disagrees with her or him, that's a pretty big number.
When you consider that Democrats and independents probably are much smaller in their support.
Well, you're almost always going to fall right in line with the president of your party. I mean, almost always. And so to have 42% actively opposing a move by the president of their own party, I think if you look historically on most issues, I might be wrong, but I think if you look at the polling, that's a pretty high number.
Still. Well put, Steve. Fair enough. I hear you completely on that. But how do you say that? How do you say, I want those families to be separated that way? You could put a kid on Mars and it wouldn't feel any more alien to a child who doesn't know the ways of the world or the language of the people, or that big man with a gun who says, oh, we have an orchestra here, a chorus here of crying babies the other night. How terrifying is that for a kid? So there I was in the fourth grade. We were living in Honolulu. Friends of ours were leaving the island. My dad was in the Air Force, and folks were coming and going all of the time. And so we went to see them as they left the island and went back to the States. And they were going back to the States on a ship. So my three siblings and I and my mom and dad all went to the boat for the farewell party, which was on the ship, which was kind of cool. And so we got to walk around the ship, and the kids all played in the stateroom while the adults, this was the late 60s, went somewhere else for cocktails. And so we were all just in there. And every now and then, my mom or dad would come down and check on us and make sure that no small fires had started. But mostly they weren't checking on us. And mostly we were having fun. But I was a little nervous about the whole thing. Because being on a boat that could sail away, and I don't have eyesight with my parents, made me nervous. So I'm having fun, but I'm also a little anxious. And then a guy starts walking down the hall, and he's hitting these chimes, bing, bong, bing, bong. And he calls out, all ashore that's going to shore, bing, bong, bing, bong. And he's walking up and down the aisles, telling all of those that were visiting on the ship, you've got to get off this ship now. And I lost my ship. I went nuts. I was like, oh my God, my parents are leaving us. And I started to scream and cry. My sister Jean, 18 months my senior, and about 1,000 years in maturity my senior, reached her hand back and slapped me as square across the face as you could. And she knocked me out of it. I was like, what? And she said, stop it. Dad will be here. And I said, okay. But then I ran out of the room because I was still terrified. And when I turned around, everybody else was now terrified. I terrified the whole room of kids. And we all went running down the hall. Here comes my dad, half a gin and tonic in his hand, coming the other way. Whoa! We were crying, Dad, when the man said that the people were going to leave the boat and we were going to be on the boat and you were going to be on the boat. He said, did you think I would leave you? I mean, my circumstances were safe and secure, and I was so terrified that today, while we got off the boat fine, I think my dad was actually thinking, maybe John should stay. I still remember that feeling. Now I'm thinking about these little kids. I'll pause. You may want to join the conversation. Thomas Jefferson joins us later, by the way, in the 2 o'clock hour. He's going to be on stage with us at the College of DuPage soon, so TJ and I will preview that and talk about some other things. That's all coming up on WGN. The number's 312-981-7200. Start with Jeff. You're on WGN. Jeff, this is John. Let me see if I got the phone turned up. You're up. What's on your mind, Jeff?
How you doing?
Hey.
So I have a big problem with this whole thing. My problem with this is that if you or I go out, we break the law, and we have children, we are going to go to jail for it, and we're going to be separated from our children. A lot of these people that are coming over the border have already broken the law, and they're being separated from the children because either, one, they're not their children, and they're using these children to get over the border, or two, they've already yelled that they've broken the law, and they need to be put in jail anyways.
You think that's most of them?
I'm not saying it's most of them.
Well, let's just talk about most of them. What do you think should happen to most of them?
I think they should try to go through the regular protocol to get into this country.
Okay.
Here's the issue, though. Can I just say, though, if you have children and you break the law and say the law is a bar fight, your children are not taken from you just because you've committed a crime doesn't mean they're going to take your children or that you're going to go to jail and be separated from them. The punishment here for coming into the country illegally is to be deported, not to go to prison and being taken away from your kids. So I don't know that I completely agree with the analogy.
Well, and if you're separated from your children, maybe you go to jail or you go wherever you go if you're arrested in America for a domestic crime, but your kids aren't put in a lockup either. Presumably they're back with family, right?
Right, but it's the proportionality of the punishment. You don't go to prison for trying to get into the country illegally. You're deported. So it's not like saying if you're a murderer and you get separated from your parents, yeah. You know, it's not the same thing. The punishment here far exceeds the crime.
If you're interested, and this is an interesting experiment just to follow both sides of the story to the degree that there are, go to MSNBC and go to foxnews.com. I've been clicking back and forth. The imagery is really startling. You know, MSNBC is inclined to show you those little foil blankets on a floor. And then literally the first time I looked at this story on Fox News, they look like college dorms. They look nicer than the college dorms I ever stayed in where the kids were being housed.
Do you understand where they haven't shown where the girls are?
I've seen
that?
People. Amy Susskind said, where are the little girls? They don't know the answer.
The tours they've given of the facilities are for the boys, and the boys and girls are separated. And this Homeland Security Secretary was asked yesterday about where the girls are and didn't give a good answer. It's just kind of a weird twist to the whole thing.
Hey, Sherry, you're on WGN. What can we do for you? Hold on, Sherry. Are you there? Okay, Sherry's gone. But she says, I'm a lifelong Republican voter. And I have never been so disgusted, said Sherry. I'm reading her screen from Elif. Let's go to Anne on line 5. Hey, Anne, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hello. I had an interesting, I live in Bureau County. I called Adam Kinzinger's office this morning to find out his candid position on separating the children from the adults or the mothers or the dads at when they're seeking asylum. A lot of back and forth about there's a law that, you know, Kinzinger's meeting with President today, this whole thing started with Obama, and it got into the main reason they're doing this is to stop child trafficking that has gone up so much in so many percentage points in the last little while, and they must stop this. So they're stopping them and removing them from the adults because they're not sure that those are their parents.
And that's what Adam Kinzinger, well, yeah, keep going.
And how can you decide right then who's, you know, not moms, dads, whatever? He said, paternity. I said, what? He said, it's science. He said, you know, we do paternity tests. And I said, paternity tests. So if what if they don't pass or they do pass?
Wait a minute.
They're taking so it away anyway.
Hold on. So Kinzinger's office said that when they come in, they give them a paternity test? What's that, a blood test?
Yes. Okay. They are doing that to discriminate whether they belong to that parent or not.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And the whole thing is to stop child trafficking.
Got it. Okay. President hasn't said that so much, but fine. Fine. I believe that was the reason that some of this was originally considered and passed, why they had the option for that. But do you really think that that's what's happening here? We're all over the map here, aren't we? You can book a trip on the Mississippi, by the way, where some of those towns are located, at riverboattwilight.com, which is a lot of fun. Hey, listen, if you go to WGNradio.com right now, you will be able to see a handsome picture of Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States, and details about his next visit to Chicago. He'll be on the stage with me at the College of DuPage Saturday, August 18th at 8 in the morning. I'm sorry, at 10 in the morning. At 10 in the morning. This will be just a really fun, funny, warm, nurturing. Think of all the things that we could use from American government right now, you know, either side. Thomas Jefferson always brings that. What would the founding fathers say, and what would you say to them? Well, here's your chance. Saturday, it'll be the 18th of August, and the tickets technically have just gone on sale. There is not a link for some reason right now on our website, but if you call the box office at the College of DuPage, you can buy the tickets right now, and we'll get the link up there. But all the information you want to know, all the information you want to know is on our website. Just go to WGNradio.com. We didn't talk about this story, but I'm kind of fascinated by it. Let me just finish the last topic we did with a couple of your texts. We were talking about the separation of children from their parents that are crossing into this country illegally. A lot of folks are very upset about it, but 58% of Republicans support the president's position on this. From 847, lots of talk about what we shouldn't do. How about talk about what we should do? From 920, John, please stop portraying this in any mild terms. This is not about optics. It's wrong, pure and simple, and anyone who thinks it is in any way justifiable is complicit. From 847, I wish I could comfort the kids that are separated from their parents, but I cannot forget everything that comes before that. 219 said, yours was a great story, John, about being separated from your folks. Yes, it's one thing to interpret life's happenings as an adult, but oh, so much differently from the child's point of view. And finally, 630 said about my feeling of anxiety once when I was separated from my parents for a short time. I felt that same way on my first day of kindergarten. I totally lost it. Later, as a kindergarten teacher, I watched terrified children on their first day of school, and it is primal. There's a story in Kansas about a little boy who was at a museum. They were having a wedding and reception there. You know the way they'll rent places out. The kid's five, briefly separated from his parents. He thought he would go over and hug a $132,000 statue, which he did, and then he knocked the thing over and broke it. The insurance company from the museum, from the city, because I believe it was at a community center or a city-owned property, the insurance company that represents them said that the parents have to pay. Which is kind of weird to me, because what's the point of insurance? Insurance is when something gets broken and then the insurance companies pay for it.
Well, you still have a deductible.
I think they're telling, here's what it says here. It says, surveillance video captured the five-year-old boy hugging the sculpture on display before it falls over on top of him. He struggles a bit when suddenly the statue and the boy topple to the ground. Where's the thing about the insurance company? Following the incident, Goodman and her husband received a letter from an insurance company for the city saying the parents had been negligent for not monitoring their children, so they have to pay the $132,000 total cost of the sculpture.
Right.
I ain't writing that check, man. I'm going to jail. I am not writing that check. Although, and you know, they're saying, look, lady, you can't be letting your kid run around at the age of five with all sorts of fancy statues and breakable stuff. You can't. That's on you, lady. And if your kid does that, you owe $132,000.
He better start a lemonade stand.
There's a picture. You know, little kid, $132,000 I need. Lemonade, a dollar.
You know they're going to go viral.
With each lemonade sold, he crosses off, you know, one of the tally marks. And now he's down to 129,999 lemonades to go.
She should start a Kickstarter for all the parents who haven't watched their kids.
Well, this is what I'm wondering. As a parent, what was the thing that your kid accidentally destroyed?
My beautiful peony bushes.
Your kids wiped out your peonies bushes or your peony bushes?
My son was learning to swing a baseball bat, and just before they bloomed, they looked like little balls. And he took out the entire hedge worth.
Really?
Just imagine as a little boy how great that would have felt.
Boom, boom, boom.
Little smack of the bat, exploding petals.
Everybody's put a baseball through the window, right? I mean, that's pretty common. Vandalizing your dad's beautiful bushes, that's another one. We had three beautiful trees in our backyard. And I remember once saying to my mom and dad, hey, can I cut down one of those trees? Our backyard abutted a gully of a bunch of trees. It was a wooded area. They thought I was going to cut down one of the trees in the woods, like a little tiny tree. But I had gotten a saw for my birthday, and I cut down about a 40-foot tree in the backyard. And they heard this crashing sound. And my mom came out and said, Johnny, what did you do? I said, you said I could cut down the tree. She said, I meant one of those trees. See the hundreds of thousands of trees in the gully? You can cut those down, not one of the three trees in our backyard.
And then Johnny said, oh, okay. And he went out to the woods.
When I was a kid, my mom had this really nice clay teapot, and it was from London, too.
Oh, no.
And I broke it, of course, but instead of telling my mom about it, I left the tea cozy, the thing that covers the teapot to keep it warm, over it. And so when my mom lifted it without being told, it all just came collapsing down, and she hasn't let me live it down.
Oh, wait, I thought you were going to say, and so she thought she did it, which would have been very clever. But no, she knew it was you.
She knew it was me. I broke so much stuff when I was a kid.
Your kid broke what where? And what do you think of who has to pay for it? My number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You know, I'm mad at it. I mean, I get annoyed at parents who don't pay attention to their kids. If you're having a wedding reception with children in a museum with statues that kids can come up to, maybe the museum should be monitoring that, too. I mean, it is their stuff to safeguard.
I don't even like kids at weddings.
Yeah, there's a lot of kids who aren't invited to weddings for this and other reasons. But I'm sorry. I think I'm maddest at the insurance company. You're an insurance company. You know what insurance companies do? They take money from you. Every month, they take money from you. They take money from you. They take money from you. And the only reason they take money from you is so that someday you may need some of that money back because your house burned down or you got in a car crash. But boy, they do not like to write that check. And if they do, they say, you know what? We're cutting you off. A friend of a friend's house got struck by lightning and burned to the ground, and the insurance company wouldn't reinsure them because what? They're a lightning risk? Okay, 312-981-7200.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have
we
to.
We are high.
Here's John Williams.
Above the Chicago River, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's John Williams on WGN. Here weekdays from, let's see, I'm almost sure I got this now, 1 to 3. Saturdays from 10 a.m. until noon. We do a podcast called The Mincing Rascals. And on social media, I'm WGN, WGN King John. Like and follow me there. On a phone line is the old friend of ours. Hold on, I got to turn up the... Boy, Steve, you know what? The volume control on the headphones... That button needs to be bigger, doesn't it?
Yes. Are you talking about headphones?
Yeah.
It makes me cry.
It's amazing to me how much that little button matters.
Well, so I think, and people don't care about this, but I wonder if they could just route that differently because the other button is there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get on that, will you? You've got more clout than me.
You got a team of really smart people that just spent a year asking us questions about how we want this studio. And we've all come in, and now everybody's going, maybe the piano could be over there.
Well, why is the piano over there?
I don't know. Our old friend Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States, author of your Declaration of Independence, is on the phone. President Jefferson, welcome back to WGN in Chicago. How are you, sir?
Good day to you, citizen.
I got a couple questions for you. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and by the way, we invited you to come on today because you are going to be on stage with me Saturday, August 18th at the College of DuPage. We've done many conversations there. Tickets have just gone on sale today. Go to WGNradio.com. Go to WGNradio.com, and there's a link to them right now. You can get the best seats in the house. They have just gone on sale. We expect another sellout. We expect this show to sell quickly. So WGNradio.com for our COD show, and that'll be Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. I was going to bring you a bottle
of... Meriwether Lewis's birthday. Did you know that? Meriwether Lewis, my young protege, who made the journey all the way to the Pacific Ocean and back again. One of the greatest explorers in the history of North America. He was born on August 18th.
I did not know that, but I'll make a note to bring that up. Maybe we could perhaps a cake. Maybe, well, or toast him. I was actually thinking about you the other day because I was at a store and they had Thomas Jefferson, I think it was bourbon. There was a brown liquor I could buy, and it had your name on the label. Maybe we'll throw back a shot before the show, something like that.
We could, although I never drank spirituous liquor. I drank wine, of course, the finest wine that I could afford, and Bordeaux whenever possible. I did not drink Applejack or whiskey or gin, but, of course, they existed in my time. And I don't think I particularly like my name being used to sell something that intoxicates the American people.
Would you have minded your name on anything else? Thomas Jefferson furniture, the Jefferson car, something like that? There's a Lincoln I could buy. How about your name just as a brand in general? How would you feel about that?
Well, I don't really think we should commercialize our statesman, but if you were going to use my name on something, it should be on a library or some sort of word processing machine. I had a pantograph that I used in my own lifetime, something that is Jeffersonian, but I wouldn't put it on a scooter or a pair of skates or something. I think it should be something that has to do with the Enlightenment, don't you?
Maybe so. Yeah, that would be appropriate. But trust me, if somebody, but if there was an energy drink or it doesn't matter, you know, sweat socks. If somebody wanted to use the name, I think they would.
Dueling pistols, perhaps. So that would be Hamilton.
Yeah, no kidding. I got a couple of other more relevant questions for you. How about this one? Our president is at odds with the media. He's claimed that they are the enemy of the people, but you sure didn't get along with the media either. How similar or dissimilar were your views on the American media as compared to our president now?
I'll take that question very seriously, sir. The First Amendment is not an absolute, but it is a practical absolute, and it's a test for statesmen, because almost every president, George Washington, John Adams, I, my two protégés, Madison and Monroe, felt that the press was unfair to them, that the press had it in for them, that they published only negative things, or that they misunderstood or deliberately misunderstood the policies of their administrations, and I certainly felt that. I was treated very unfairly at times by the press, but I urge everyone who's listening to you to turn to my second inaugural address, which was issued on the 4th of March, 1805, and I addressed the question of freedom of the press there and said that it tested the principle of the First Amendment to see so much scurrilous and irresponsible and really ungenerous newspaper coverage that had occurred, but we mustn't succumb to the idea of censorship. We need to make sure that we understand that this is one of the costs of human liberty, that we need a free press, that even an irresponsible free press is better than one that is censored or in any way persecuted by government.
You agree that the press can be the enemy of the people?
No, never. I think the press can be the enemy of a certain individual, but I never felt that. I always felt that the press was a vital link in freedom. You know, I actually said to Edward Carrington in 1787, given the choice between government without newspapers or newspapers without government, I would not hesitate to prefer newspapers, because if the people are informed, they can govern themselves. But if they are not informed, they never know what to trust in government. So I believe in essentially in unlimited freedom of the press, even when it is unpleasant for the sitting president to accept what is published.
Do you think that the Founding Fathers gave the president too much power? I'm just looking at the sorts of things that the current president is able to do, strike or change trade policies, end the exercise with our allies, the South Koreans, on his own, this robust prosecution of families that are crossing illegally when so many people don't agree with it, but the president just time and again does what he wants. I didn't know the president had that much power. Did you guys give him too much?
I don't think so. If the things that you're saying are true, that means that you have forgotten your constitutional guarantees. You know, the first article of the Constitution is about the Congress, and the Congress should be the principal branch of our government. The second article is about the president, and the Founding Fathers deliberately attempted to keep the president within check, because we had just suffered for decades bad governors appointed by the British Crown and, of course, King George III. So we were working to create legislative primacy and legislative supremacy, and we worked hard to put a straitjacket around the powers of the president. So if the president in your time is as powerful a being as you say he is, that's really because you have let that happen. In other words, the Founding Fathers didn't envision that. That's an evolution of your Constitution that you have permitted to occur, and if you wanted to, you could pull back some of those powers and return to legislative supremacy, or tear up the Constitution and start fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, you always say that. That's not going to happen. We're not going to do that.
You take my point, however, that the Founding Fathers would probably be appalled by the executive authority in any of your recent presidents. In fact, all presidents, perhaps since Theodore Roosevelt, that the Founding Fathers were highly uncomfortable with executive authority. And we did everything we could to prevent a kingship here. If that has essentially evolved over time, then you either need to bring the Constitution into harmony with that new reality, or you need to strike back against a runaway executive and restore the balance of the Constitution. You know, John Adams always said to me, checks and balances, Mr. Jefferson, checks and balances. And, of course, he was right.
You think the president's power of the pardon we got right? Did you guys set us up well for that?
Well, I didn't write the Constitution, I should say, and I wasn't there. I was in France. But the pardoning power is almost an absolute for the president. He can essentially pardon anyone he wishes for any reason. There are no checks on the pardon power in the Constitution. I would be sorry if it were used in any wholesale way or if it were used to protect people around the executive. The idea was, let's say somebody is prosecuted in Florida for some crime and the executive believes that there was too zealous a prosecution, or that there was a mistake or new facts have come to light, or that the person had redeemed himself by exemplary behavior in prison. Then the president steps in, but not to protect himself in any way from the criminal process.
Well, you know, 200 years later, lots of anything can happen over a couple hundred years. And guess what? We've got somebody who may use it preemptively. And there's nothing that the founding fathers, I know you weren't there, but I mean, they took your calls. I'm a little disappointed that you guys didn't have more foresight than this.
I don't think you should blame us, but let me put it this way. You have one remedy and one remedy only under our Constitution for a presidency that has gone bad, and that is impeachment. And I always thought that the impeachment clause of the Constitution was too narrowly drawn, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors. It seemed to me that there ought to be a more elastic clause there so that we could get rid of presidents who were incompetent or senile or who were engaged in malfeasance, were fundamentally misrepresenting the will of the American people, but perhaps had not committed any prosecutable crimes. That the narrowness of the impeachment clause, I think, has prevented you from ever having a successful impeachment of a president.
Well, we did amend the Constitution in case of some kind of incompetence of the president, but again, I think that's too narrowly defined. It requires the president's party or cabinet. It requires the vice president to endorse that, and unless the guy's completely gone loopy, I cannot imagine a scenario where even now that would be enacted. You know what I mean?
Yes, but ask yourself this question, John. If the impeachment power of the Congress turned into a political tool and it was used because they didn't happen to like the president or his policies or his party, that would be a terrible mistake. So you need to make sure the impeachment is difficult, that there's a high bar, and that it must be precisely enumerated for the flaws or the crimes of that executive. But if you make it too tight, as you seem to have done, you know, the United States Constitution is more than 200 years old, and there has never been a successful impeachment of a president. You know there have been impeachable presidents during that time.
Okay, do you have another minute, sir? I want to let my listeners text or call in. The number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You have a question or comment, an observation for the third president of the United States. He wrote the Declaration of Independence, you know. This is your chance to say hi. And then we'll be on stage Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. at the College of DuPage. TJ and I will kick things about on stage a little bit like this, and then you'll get a chance to ask questions, too. We've been doing this for about 25 years now, and every single show is sold out. So get your tickets now at WGNradio.com. Are you still there, Mr. Jefferson?
Yes, citizen. I am listening carefully to you.
By the way, did they have anything like the World Cup when you were president? Everybody, the whole world is watching this soccer tournament in Russia right now.
No, we didn't have such a thing. We had horse racing, and we had dicing. And as a young man at the College of William and Mary, I used to work off some tension at the end of a long day of studying. I often studied 12 or 14 hours a day. I would run a mile out from the center of Williamsburg and then a mile back, but we did not have the games that you all celebrate in your time, and I once said that games that involve violence and a ball are not conducive to character building.
Yeah, I think you got that wrong. Think about that, how different life would be if we did not have basketball, football, baseball, hockey, soccer tournaments for the kids, lacrosse for crying out loud, golf and tennis. Did you have golf back in your day or tennis?
Both existed. Golf was just getting its start in Scotland. It hadn't really gotten to this country, and I don't think you can ever imagine me golfing. Tennis has existed since the Middle Ages, something called real tennis. Has existed in Britain for a very long time. Again, I never did that, but instead of all these gladiatorial engagements, why not have an interesting debate about Montesquieu or about the lost works of Livy or Aristotle?
Well, we're trying
fill a stadium for that.
You know what I'm about to say. We're trying to fill a stadium here, boss. A couple of text questions from our listeners. What did President Jefferson think of how Abraham Lincoln handled the press during the Civil War? Well, that would have predated you or post-dated you. You predated that, but do you have any wisdom for us on that sort of thing?
Well, I can say this. Of course, I didn't live to see the work of the 16th president, and I would have disagreed with his view that you can hold the Union together with an army. It seems to me that any state that wishes to secede has a natural right to do so. But if he disliked the press, he needs to get in line, because George Washington once got so angry about a newspaper that he threw it on the ground and then ripped the wig off of his head and dashed that to the ground and stomped on it. So every president has a frustration level with the press, because everyone who's in power, and this was true of me too, I'm afraid to say, we become righteous. We think we know more than others. We think that we have a special wisdom or a special perspective. And when we see that others don't look upon our deeds as cheerfully as we do, it causes great consternation.
Yeah. All right, what about this? Two more quick questions and then a call. Ask President Jefferson what he thinks of the Electoral College.
It's time to get rid of the Electoral College. You know, I was a victim of it. I tied in the electoral vote with Aaron Burr, even though every American knew I was to be president and he was to be vice president, and that created one of the first constitutional crises in American history. The Electoral College was designed by the Founding Fathers because they were afraid of democracy. They wanted to put a kind of a hedge between the people and their choice. It seems to me that now that you have a wholesale democracy, you can safely amend the Constitution, get rid of certain of those medieval elements.
Do you think then that whoever gets the most votes should be president?
Yes, generally speaking, that's how things work in a majoritarian system. If I get 51% of the votes, I defeated you, even if you got 49%.
What about this? If George Washington was using his office to enrich himself, his family, and his cronies in various and nefarious ways, would you guys have impeached him from the 708 area code?
Probably not, because George Washington was such a national hero that we probably wouldn't have had the heart to do it. But I tried to get Hamilton removed from the cabinet of Washington because I was pretty sure that he was engaged in corruption and personal peculation. So we have to watch our elected officials very carefully. Power corrupts. And even George Washington probably could not stand muster of an ethics board or commission in your time. He never took a salary. He always said, just pay my expenses. But his expenses were often astronomical.
One quick question. Barb, you're on the air with Thomas Jefferson.
Hi, Thomas. I have a question. I know you spoke of disliking the executive privilege, and I want to know, how do you deal, or how do you, I guess, blame a president for following the rule of law, and he gets blamed for it being a bad law? And Lincoln said the way to get rid of a bad law is to enact it. You know, it's
well,
a bad law. You've got to get rid of it.
Just want to ask you to read your Constitution when you have a moment, because you will not find executive privilege or executive orders in the Constitution. So
you know
we need
she's
to
talking
stay
about
true.
Here. You know what she's talking
document.
About here. She's yes, as have some of our other callers. They said, look, the president's only following the law on this immigration issue. What wisdom do you have for us on that?
Well, I'll just say this. Every nation has a right to control its borders. Every nation has a right to determine who gets in and who's excluded. And if you don't do that, you have abdicated one of the fundamental purposes of government. And you can't have simply open borders, because it's important for you to be able to define what it is to be an American. I think that's very, very important. In my time, of course, we were eager for immigration because we had this vast Western territory with no people in it. I think that it would be a mistake ever to divide children from their parents at a border or anywhere else. That humanity must be the highest order of our elected officials. We're a republic, not a dictatorship, not a monarchy, not an oligarchy, not a military system. We're a republic, and human values, universal human values that know no borders, are essential. So maybe we don't let these people in, but we treat them with great respect and dignity.
Well, about that, then, you're a hypocrite, aren't you? Because that's exactly what you did with the slaves.
Oh, yes, I'm a hypocrite. There's no question about that.
By the way, I don't want to end on that cross note, but I just had to say
you were the one who brought it up.
Well, then I got news for you. The Monticello, where your famed home has now and lets us, as of this week, view Sally Hemings' quarters. I wonder what you say about that.
I can't speak. I'm merely blushing. I think there are so many things that might interest people about me. My views on paleontology, on library science, my Declaration of Independence, my book Notes on Virginia, my theories of agriculture, my love of wine, my interest in architecture, etc. There are hundreds of subjects that might be worth scrutiny, including my vision of this country. But what happened at Monticello seems less interesting. And of course, the Sally Hemings thing is really mostly about prurience. You ask the people who come to find out about that, they're not interested in the history of race or enslavement. They're interested in sexual scandal, and I blush. I merely blush at such a thing, sir.
You and I will be on stage at the College of DuPage Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. I'm going to give you a glass of Jefferson bourbon. Maybe I'll find some Jefferson wine. Somebody probably has your name on a bottle like that, too.
I'm hoping for Jell-O shots, sir.
I'll bet you're not. President Jefferson, we'll see you soon. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, my friend.
I am not doing Jell-O shots. By the way, a text has just poured in. I understand my friend Kathy Yates is listening to us, traveling from, I think, Peoria to Minnesota. Hi, Kathy. Call in anytime. The number is 312-981-7200. Kenneth Moten from ABC News is on the phone. Kenneth, I'll just take a minute of your time, but I got a couple of questions about how the immigration debate is going. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. I hope you're well.
We're doing just fine here in Chicago, but the whole world is watching what's happening along the U.S.-Mexico border, and it seems to me like the Democrats really feel like they have the president on the ropes here, but whenever the president feels cornered, he usually just gets that much more stubborn. Which way is this thing going to break? What are you hearing on the Hill?
What we're hearing here is there might not be a legislative fix, especially this week when it comes to the separation of immigrant families. You're right. The president has remained defiant. We saw him just about an hour ago at a speech that wasn't even about immigration, but he spent several minutes talking about immigration. And he essentially says Congress needs to act and give the government the legal authority to detain and promptly remove families together as a unit. And if not, then this will continue, his zero tolerance policy that's resulted in the separation of these families. And so you saw Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer also today, just moments ago, just as defiant, saying the president needs to fix this. This is not a legislative fix, and the president can literally fix this in the next minute with the stroke of his executive pen.
Well, that's because those people would still be doing what they're doing. They'd still be breaking the same laws. But the question is, how vigorously do we prosecute them, right?
That is exactly right, because we know that this has been the case and the laws have been on the books for the past few years when it comes to George W. Bush administration, President Obama's administration, but the Trump administration is doing things differently as far as enforcement of the laws. The Department of Homeland Security Secretary says that this administration is actually enforcing the laws, but they're doing it to an extent that it's resulting, the criminal prosecution of the adults who crossed the border who were with children, this is resulting in the separation, because obviously you can't take children to prison or to jail. But we're seeing a number of laws here. We are seeing a number of bills here that are being introduced that just target the separation of families. Republicans and Democrats are introducing legislation that just focuses on stopping the separation. One bill even keeps the family unit together. while the adult awaits prosecution. We've seen other bills by Republicans that will keep the families together and put them in some type of temporary shelter or a tent city until the prosecution happens.
What does the president want? Is he hoping that the legislation would include border wall funding?
The president wants four pillars, as he calls them. He wants his border wall funded. And that's about $25 billion that we're hearing in one of the bills that the president will be briefed on today when he comes to Capitol Hill. It addresses that. He wants changes to the visa system. He wants also a number of other things when it comes to border security. And the president is calling for all of those things. And essentially, it's a non-starter for him. Obviously, Democrats are pointing to the fact that they believe that the president's using these crying children as a bargaining chip, as a pawn. But the president says no. He hates to see these families separated, but he's enforcing the law here.
One last thing. Do you sense that pressure from Republicans might get him to change his view on this a little bit?
I do think if anything is possible and you have a good bit of the GOP conference, even the hardline conservatives who are breaking from the president here and saying you've got to stop this, I think it could have an impact. But at this point, I think the president sees this as, you know, one of his number one campaign promises. We know this president likes to keep his campaign promises, and he feels that his base is on his side. And with his base on his side, with him keeping to his promise, that he is in, essentially the winner here. He's on the right side here. But I will say that those images are powerful. And the chorus, the bipartisan chorus here on Congress, is getting even louder as well.
Okay. Kenneth Moten, who is in Washington following the debate on Capitol Hill, the president's meeting with the legislative leaders today. Is that correct?
That is correct, at 5:30.
5:30 your time, right?
My time, yes.
So 4:30 our time in about an hour and a half here. Okay, we'll follow that story. I know you guys do for us. Kenneth, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Hey, thank you.
Kenneth Moten with ABC News. Elif, where are the markets, please?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 308.25 points at 24,679.22 points.
Okay.
The Dow Jones is down 1.23%, John.
1.23%.
I may be robot, but I do exhale and inhale.
Evidently. You know what got lost in all of this, by the way, last couple days, was the president's description of a space force. You have the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, the Coast Guard. Those are the five branches of service. But the president is now envisioning a sixth branch of service. And he talked about that the other day. And then everybody asks him about, of course, the immigration issue. But I think what he was trying to say about a space force was fascinating. I didn't know that we need one. I'm not exactly sure what a space force is.
Well, I think they were probably talking about illegal aliens. And then...
and then he went, aliens? Why? Pip-poo! He was thinking of space aliens, and then he said, well, then we'll get us...
He's like, we got to cover our fronts. The aliens are coming from everywhere.
Yeah.
Mexico and Mars.
So what does our space force do? Is the guys flying around little spaceships in, like, a video game when they see the bad guys coming from Mars or Mexico? They pew, 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 shoot
I think
down.
The aliens might think we're the bad guys, separating parents from other aliens.
True dad, Holmes. But I'm still not sure what a space force is. Elif, let's play for our listeners track one. This is the president. And, of course, everybody asked him about the other kinds of aliens, but he was more interested in a outer space force. This is what he said.
My administration is reclaiming America's heritage as the world's greatest spacefaring nation.
Spacefaring.
The essence of the American character is to explore new horizons and to tame new frontiers.
You know the name of this song? What song is this from? What TV show is this from?
The Jetsons?
Nope, but you're thinking right. Judy's in the newsroom. Judy, do you know which TV show this is from?
No.
The Martians?
It sounds so familiar, though.
There is My Favorite Martian. This isn't My Favorite Martian. I was going to get that, but then I had Lost in Space.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do track two, Elif. This is the president, and he's speaking more specifically. Elif, are you ready over there? So we're going to play track two, right? Are you listening to me? I'm looking at my producer on the other side of the glass. Okay, track two. This is the president speaking more specifically about what he wants.
When it comes to defending America, it is not enough to merely have an American presence in space. We must have American dominance in space. So important. Very importantly, I'm hereby directing the Department of Defense and Pentagon to immediately begin the process necessary to establish a Space Force as the sixth branch of the armed forces. That's a big statement. We are going to have the Air Force, and we are going to have the Space Force. It is going to be something so important. We're going to have the Space Force. In a few moments, I will sign a new directive to federal departments and agencies. They will work together for space traffic management. But don't let it get too out of control, please. Now we are ready to begin the next great chapter of American space exploration. This is a very important day. This is a very important gathering. Once more, we will launch intrepid souls blazing through the sky and soaring into the heavens. Once more, we will summon the American spirit to tame the next great American frontier. And once more, we will proudly lead humanity. And that's what it is. It's humanity beyond the earth and into those forbidden skies. But they will not be forbidden for long. There's no place like space. Good luck with Space Force.
Okay, I have no idea what Space Force is, but he really did say there is no place like space. Good luck with Space Force. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis in-house.
Yes.
Hi there, John.
Yes, indeed we are. And I was just informed by the people who actually produce this show, and I have never met them before. It's very interesting.
No eye contact is allowed.
Yes, I don't speak. They informed me that, don't forget, during the Top 5 at 5 today, we have a family four-pack to get into the Blackhawks convention, which is a really cool...
Yeah, that thing sells out every year.
Yeah, and it's 3 days of action. You know, that Friday, I'm always amazed at how many people are there right as the bell is ringing at like 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. It is amazing.
Raring to go. It's so fun. And you can see why. Because you just want to fit in everything that there is to get in during that convention.
I'm always reminded, too, at how loyal Blackhawks fans are because their gear is the most expensive to wear, right? Like with those sweaters and jerseys. And
because red doesn't go with everything? Why? What do you mean expensive?
Well, like, you can get a Cubs t-shirt or a White Sox hat, and that's going to cost you $20, $30, $50. Mm-hmm. But the souvenir swag for hockey fans...
Right, an actual hockey sweater.
Yeah. Those things are $200, and everybody has three of them. And they all wear them at that event.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, the sea of red.
Right.
And then you get a chance to get it signed, too, which just about, you know, makes your entire year. My nephew had that happen last year, and he just was bowled over, so happy.
Yeah. Are you a red guy or a white guy?
Red.
Red?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The green ones are pretty.
You know what I like, too? Yeah, the green ones are cool. I also like the black ones.
Yeah.
Black
Those are cool.
When are you giving those away?
We're giving away the family four-pack to the Blackhawks convention in the 5 o'clock hour.
His producer told him. Okay, I got to go, Ro. Anything else you want to say?
No, that's enough. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Thank you for stopping by.